You're listening to the final days of KBOO's All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2 special programming. You can hear the unique content produced by KBOO creators throughout February and March at kboo.fm/thrills. This Volume 2 special campaign ends on March 25th. Help us reach our goal of $17,000 by donating now. Go to kboo.fm/give or text the word KBOO to 44321. Thanks.
When the farmer comes to town with his wagon broken down, the farmer is...
Tune in to The Dirtbag every second Wednesday of the month at 11 a.m.
Learn to grow your tasty fruits and vegetables in your home garden.
There is a monthly garden stumper, calendar of gardening events. You can even call in with your gardening questions.
That's The Dirtbag every second Wednesday, 11 to 12 a.m. That's on
KBOO Portland.
Listen,
laugh,
learn.
The farmer is the man that feeds them all.
Welcome to the Talking Earth for the beginning of spring, March 20th, or whenever you happen to be listening to this. Right now is also part of KBOO's Spring Pledge Drive, All Thrills, No Spills, or All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. KBOO is here for you 24/7, and it's only a couple times a year we ask you to be here for us. KBOO is free to listen, but electricity isn't free to us. We have some paid staff and other operating expenses. So now or later, just go to kboo.fm and they'll tell you what to do there. Tomorrow is also International Poetry Day, but today we have three fine Oregon poets, Julia Gaskill, David Mehmet, and John Miller, and I'll be throwing in poems by non-Oregonians, Tongo Eisen Martin and Amiri Baraka. But let's start with the visiting team, David Mehmet. He's a friend of mine from LeGrand who will be reading from his new book, Small Matters Mean the World, which David says you can get a signed copy through his website, David Mehmet, and Mehmet is MEMMOTT.com. His 1996 book, The Larger Earth, Descending Notes of a Grounded Astronaut, is to me one of the most imaginative and wonderful books of poetry I've ever read. Find it if you can. David Mehmet has been living and writing in the Pacific Northwest most of his life. His poems have appeared recently in Basalt, Cirque, Gargoyle, The Poeming Pigeon, Triggerfish, and Willawah Journal. He founded Phantom Drift, a journal of new fabulism, and Wordcraft of Oregon. His digital art and other samples of his writings can be accessed through that website, davidmehmet.com. And here's David himself.
I will be reading from my new collection of poems, Small Matters Mean the World, which was published by Red Bat Books in their Pacific Northwest Writers series. The collection came together during the pandemic, so I suppose it should be no surprise that there is a lot of mortality and darkness in these poems. But like the painters say, sometimes it takes a darker dark to bring out the light, and I'm hoping that there's enough splashes of color and flashes of light in these poems to be of interest. I'm going to kind of begin in reverse order, and I will start with the last poem in the book, which is called A View from the Summit. From where I stand, looking back on the dual-tracked trail that winds up the steep canyon like narrow gauge, the exercise makes sense to me now. I have always followed tracks, scissored through naked larch, undressed by wind from the comfortable rut of my practice. Cocooned in silence, breaking new trail, I climb the mountain, exposed and unsure, precious heat lost with every breath. Alone at the summit, my nerves numb from ground chill rising through flesh, I stand alone, bent to the scent of your blood, in black tracks on a field of white fire. I feel you watching from a place unseen, made possible by where I've been, beyond the unbroken line in the bright snow. I take back with me to a warm den this possibility of a perfect glide on a well-defined track, each stride and stroke unfaltering. Going back then to the first section of the book, they're a sequence of backyard poems, and I will read about three poems from that. The first is called Pestilence, and it, of course, because it's a backyard poem, you could expect that our two yellow labs, Honey and Havoc, who are litter mates, would probably make their appearance. This is called Pestilence. Out of darkness comes disorder, clarion call of dogs barking at a shadow that squats silent in the middle of the road. The shepherds next door incite the husky across the street to howl. The black pit bull and white Samoan join in. Mayday duets broadcast through billowing slats of green cyclone fence, a rolling wave of dire warning. Our Havoc picks up the beat at the southwest corner, sounding off by the purple lilac. His sister Honey comes in on the chorus in good voice. They bounce off each other like live wires, hackles up, alert to his presence. Stopped still just outside the spot of street light, as if to gauge the calamity he provokes. Face veiled in darkness, flick of a lighter, low ember glow, phlegmatic cough, and imagined rancid breath. I call the dogs in, thank them for being on alert. Havoc takes his treat at the door and mounts the stairs to bed, having done his duty. Honey drops her shoulder to the kitchen floor, rolls over, exposing her pink belly to a warm hand. Boys in Berries. Two boys on mountain bikes ride up the sidewalk next to our garden fence. They stop and inspect the blackberries ripening under a limp sky. I am hidden by shadows on the deck, lost in stippled light behind wooden lattice. Are you stealing my berries? My disembodied voice catches them unaware. They look up as I dismount from my perch on the porch to move the sprinkler. No, sir, they sing in unison, bodies stiffening, caught red-handed with stained fingers. Of course you are, I say, picking up the hose and dragging the sprinkler around so the spray will reach a neglected corner under the front window. They must have been 8, maybe 9, one in a road warrior helmet looks defiant, The other, face concealed under a fast and furious motif, knows instantly there's no sense in denying the crime. He drops his head. Sorry. I set the timer and turn on the water. Tell you what, I promise, glancing at the boy who feels some degree of guilt. If the berries you take are inside the fence, then you'd be stealing from me. But if they're outside the fence, well, then they're fair game. These rules were as clear as I could make them. Fast and Furious relaxed, lifted his head and nodded in agreement. He asks, can you eat the red berries? Well, that patch there is blackberries, I answer. You can't eat blackberries until they're black. Red blackberries are bitter and could make you sick in the stomach. Most of the berries outside the fence were still red. They'll have to come back another day. Just before they mount their bikes and continue up the sidewalk, I point to another berry patch where the berries were already picked or withered on the vine. Now those are raspberries, I say. You eat them when they're red. The Ragdoll Revival. Mercurial spring delivers one last blow as the sap rises. A great white swale swallows the valley. Sudden hailstones hammer heads of apple dolls off their black branches. I burrow deeper and go back to sleep. Later, honey paws the frozen turf, presses her snout against a scent that runs underground like a vole. In a vigorous tug of war, she pulls up a rag doll whose limp arms slap wet muzzle. I can't say how many times she's reburied that rag doll, but it keeps rising from the grave. She shakes its spineless body with worry and whine. That doll must wear some scent from another time. The ancient world lies all around us with lessons to be relearned. Dig deeper, little sister, I say. Some relic without an alibi may swoon under scrutiny. Do not trust the rootless to lie down easy. They break their necks on cracked sepulchres. Some new likeness pokes its head out, and civilization stands on yet another educated guess, another occluded vein drawn from proximate shards. Obsessed with digging up the past, our job is never done. Honey combs the backyard over for the right spot to rebury that rag doll. Some loose soil around the compost, maybe, or there under the burn barrel. Lifting my gaze to the wider world, then, this poem is called Caught in the Updraft. Entangled in thicket, you raise your voice, and the wind slanders your name. You lost the trail a ways back, washed out in a flood. This way, the only one left open to the neutral zone. Count from flash to thunderclap the distance in seconds. Caretakers watch vital signs as a shiver intensifies into shell shock. A weight holds you down. Brush your wings. From the first leap, you might learn to fly, but first must lose the earth, flail, and fall out of a cloud upside down. On the edge of a moving boundary, you can test your tolerance, for this is that, nothing more. Listen to me carefully, she says. You must stay awake. We need to remove the breathing tube. You were never meant to stay here. The Phantom Sailor Steers to the Stars. This storm will have us treading water. We must all be in at this point if we're to continue the plunder. We could sever the moon from the tide and ride the wave to where it breaks, adrift in a green galley in a whirling gale, rolled into a bay by a gray-white whale, up all night watching the sky fill up with stars. An open heart spills a bounty in the sand. We must keep our eyes open for higher ground, a place above the water line, to spread the charts and bend the light and swing the sun through the seasons. I, more have failed, who never tried, striking out in a dinghy, head into the wind, where water meets sky. The way was lost before the way was found. I lost my younger sister, Kathy, to COVID, and I wasn't able to go to Southern Utah for the celebration of life, but I wanted to write something, and I didn't want to write about the tragedy of her loss. So I instead chose to write about a childhood memory I had of my Uncle Dan's garden. And so I remembered he was really proud of when they were able to change from using irrigation ditches to rainbirds. And so this is called Rainbird. We spent our childhood in warm kitchens, around wood stoves, under the feet of talkative women, our faces flushed from heat billowing from the oven, fresh bread and rhubarb pie piping hot, a generous slice sloughing into raw milk marbled with sour sweet juice. Uncle planted his victory garden. Victory claimed every spring from the hard scrabble when rainbirds made the desert bloom. Knee-high in sweet corn by mid-July, we pirouetted to water jets arcing over serpentine vines, rows of luscious lettuce, pungent onion, root vegetables thick as your arm. At harvest time, we shucked the nested ears for family reunion and thanked heaven for another miracle coaxed from the dust. Miracles like hollyhocks that dip down eye to eye, standing in new light, cheeks warm with first blush. In red rock canyons carved with shadow, where twisted limbs of limber pine reach for the light and sand whispers over sandstone, what survives seems all the more human. We could not prepare for how you left us, dear sister, but behold what lives in memory. The garden you brought forth, the root system that took hold here in this desert, the feast of love you laid on the table for your children and your children's children. So when we gather to share our stories, we can hear your laughter still, glimpse you walking under the chit, chit, chit of the rainbird where rainbows melt into mist. End of the World Cinema. I stand at Land's End at twilight. A salvaged ship floats up, its deck lit up like a carnival, rotating slowly in the fog. A bright beam like that of a moving picture projects through light years, pierces a field of stars, and projects titles I cannot read as my body swoons to a rudderless boat. From light years of flickering dreams, the pilot lets down a ladder. I climb, dizzy and barely able to hang on, as the disc turns on its own axis. We are old movies, narrowed down to a particle stream, our movements jerky and cosmic as our screen flickers to life. Take a seat. See yourself. Moving pictures projected back from a time light years later, reduced from a wave to a particle, immersed in your own story, unpacked by machines. What happens in the crossing doesn't happen just to you. We all come to catch small episodes that unspool and spool again. Take a seat. your story is not yet over, and it never ends where you think. And I'd like to end with the first poem in the book, which is called Where the Bow Breaks the Wave. Science tells us why we dream, even how we dream, but what we dream and what it means depends on endings concealed in beginnings. The Mayans once reclaimed sacred ground, layering one temple over another. They remade their gods with scars to reveal a hidden beauty. At the thin low line where heaven touches the earth, a river of wind carries me toward a fading light. I cannot hear my own breathing, cannot separate inner from outer as my body drifts in primordial air, unbound from bubbles in melting ice. Where the bow breaks the wave, I dream in resistance, riding the bow wave, awake in the wake of another landfall that rolls me toward home. Thank you.
Thanks, David. And now, again, it's a pledge break time. KBOO is free to you, but we have expenses. We know you enjoy KBOO. There's no commercials you have to plow through. You might have to figure around to see what you want to hear when, because there's nothing but variety here on KBOO. And again, we have Oregon poets mostly tonight, but here's the poet laureate of San Francisco, Tongo Eisen Martin, has a new book out called Blood on the Fog, and this is No One Gets Away with Mythology. I look at my floors and I want to put a president there. I don't know too many words than this group therapy is pulling out of me, pulling out all of this mixed-up murder on television, gray market tantrums of a typical aristocracy's day in the African sun, the big day on the continent now rotting and local. We will be dancing on the corner forever, an abomination to the grandmothers. You start as a toddler hermit, pay taxes, then peak the interest of God. Deal with your convictions on the way to the racism downtown. Who do you want to be when the elders come, when we make the North a souvenir? What breakup are you wishing for? Which parallel of cannibalism you might make your amateur music from? Rainmaker set about death slowly slanged? Or no, I get it. You want all the feeling of a poem. A junkie's trumpet in the refrigerator whose description is unmanipulated by the ego. And why not? They will put three apartments in the swamp and run you out of this nation state. Revolutionaries at the bottom of the scrapyard bathtub, the impression swamps made on street people, king stomach, keep America away from your drug habit, walk your drug habit to the light. School teachers, no more than bourgeois shadows cast in an empty convert hall, flipping obituary pages in your face, here is your hordes proposal, or Anglo closure, Dutch immunity, elevators diagonaling in, becoming famous among racist psychopaths, cokeheads in blue. Come here, convict little. Come to idolatry, say the dead. A rookie sent me to the imagination of a nurse station. I changed the music at my owner pass. You might actually make it to the bandstand. Simple magnetism, this god. Intercommunal forgiveness. May a good universe take us all. Tongo Eisen Martin. And now we'll move on to Julia Gaskill. Julia Gaskill is a professional daydreamer hailing from Portland. Her poetry has been published through Vagabond City Lit, Nailed Magazine, Knight's Library Magazine, and more. She was included in the anthologies In Absentia from Bicycle Comics and Excelsior from Freeze Race Poetry. She is the author of four chapbooks, the co-creator of the Bigfoot Regional Poetry Slam Festival, and she runs the monthly show Slamlandia. Her debut full-length collection, Weirdo, came out through Game Over Books in October last year. You can find Julia at Geek Girl Grown Up, I guess that's a, you know, thing, or Julia Gaskill, GASKILL.com. And here she is.
This first poem is called Weird. I burst out of my mother at 2:55 a.m. like a firecracker bombardment, my whale a piccolo peat. The doctor held me up to the light like a grand finale display and proclaimed me weird, wrote it on my birth certificate. Weird is the tethered title I have claimed with pride for decades, even when uttered by people longing to make me feel small. Weird is the insult that left my brother's friends the most, justification for elementary school pals wanting our friendship a best-kept secret. Haley Backrack threw a whole vibe of disgusted pity my way every homeroom period. Jake Feller told me at Kaylin Kalkuski's house party how some seniors had gossiped that I was so weird, like a well-versed fact. When people say weird, not with a joyful explosion, I know what they mean. They mean I love things messy and loud. They mean I march to the beat of my own heart. I am every definition of wrong. They do not like my brightness, are tired of wearing sunglasses in my presence. I am Oz, and they are Kansas. My look, my humor, my interests are not magazine cutout, Photoshop perfection. They just want me to fit in. They don't understand why I have never wanted to fit in. My father spent my teenage years disappointed that I was not like the other girls my age, floundering on his own with what to do with me. I show every emotion, especially the electric ones, especially the grotesque ones. I am a forest fire, terrifying and large. They are done talking with me now. They mean they don't want me to forget every insecurity racking my brain. They mean, stop it, not like that. Not that way. No, 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 no. And this next poem that I'm going to read is called A List of Very Small Things. Thumbtacks, baby teeth, ladybugs, cherry tomatoes, retrieved bobby pins, my hedgehog's tolerance towards humans, a squeezed hand in passing, chihuahua puppies. Backs of earrings, a hummed tune in an empty kitchen, toothbrush bristles, my boyfriend's voice when he cries, a held elevator, a shared sandwich, moss, teardrops, the earth, the smell of fresh pine, sleeping in, forehead kisses, root beer floats, cartwheels, goosebumps, my father's awareness of mental illness, my deceased mother's turtle necklace, sitting graveside deep in conversation with a ghost, knowing I have her hands, her eyes, the way my smile keeps some small part of her alive. The last heaves of sobbing, wishbones, forget-me-nots, time. This next poem is called Omen. We stood around the dead bird, our bodies a crop circle, an imprint of what once had been, a shoe nudge, a stick poke, a silent shuffle. It was the first time any of us had come face to face with death, an uninvited playmate, a rumor, a TV villain. Us cul-de-sac kids were gods until suddenly we were not. We were brimming with pretend gunplay and imaginary Pokemon until we happened upon this reality that grabbed us by our sympathetic throats. I was the only one who reached down to cradle the bird like a skinned knee, say a silent prayer to a god I still believed in. My mother later grounded me, told me of germs and disease, big words, justified anger aimed at a mourning child. Didn't I know better? A foreshadowed future, a plague upon our house, to touch a dead thing as if it could not hurt me, to touch a dead thing as if it could love me back. And this next poem is called Graduation. When it was over, neither of us knew we would never again occupy a room. Fill it with our sun-kissed laughter. Make the night sky jealous of all of the dazzle in our mischief. How do you mourn the passing of a friendship when both of you continue to breathe? When you think of each other with such fondness to this day? When there was never any malice or intentional bludgeoning? How odd to cherish someone wholehearted, love them to Jupiter and back, be each other's hothouse growth for a millennia, only to move on, as if your friendship was nothing more than a phase, an embarrassment of nostalgia, the shadow of two dancing children disappearing with the sun. And this next poem is titled Hand Me Down, Daughter. I pull down the clothes from the hangers, each a parasail in the muggy September air. My aunt plucked them from her closet not 2 days prior, her bedroom a combination of shag rug cordial and Italian quaint. She offered me the apparel along with the words. I never knew what to do with these memories, but they were too good to be given away. I tug on the dresses, the shirts, each once upon a time belonging to my mother. As the fabric billows over my face, my hands raised in the air like sparklers, I say a silent prayer, even though I know what I am and what she once was. When I look at myself in my phone's camera, the only mirror I own, I am met with the child of me. In my memories, my mother is a giant looming through the front door, her body a smothering of embraces. I was an ant in her behemoth shadow. I swim through her clothes while standing in place. This woman who would have had 5 inches on me wore a large to my small. My aunt commented over lunch how I took after her petite frame instead of my mother's bigness, and I see she spoke this true. I had hoped, hair in bun, glasses on face, baggy green dress on body, I would transform into her. Each word from my mouth, the funniest thing anyone ever heard, my brain a steel trap, my heart a compass. Instead, I am a small child playing dress up while her mother is away. I smell each piece of cloth as I disrobe, hoping for some jolt back through time, but they just smell of my aunt's home after being forgotten for 17 years. And I feel as if I too have been left behind closed doors, waiting for the right moment, waiting for someone to put me on and say, oh you, oh you, oh you, you, you. You look just like her. And this next poem is called I Come Out to My Mother at Long Last. Once I was a fawn dipped in holy water, the forest my haven, the trees my family, the flowers my communion, the creek my rosary, the leaves whispering a promise of heaven. But only if I grew to be the kind of doe the forest wanted, all speckled with beguile and tame and meek, the kind who freezes when it gets too bright, prettiest when mounted on any man's wall. But I never wanted to be a doe, when I could be a marsh wren, or a common shrew, or a short-tailed weasel, or all of the animals contained inside my lungs. I have always been a scream, really, the kind caught behind your fangs. Must be choking on the flowers again. I have always been an infatuation, the fur on my body prickling at the thought of any beautiful creature. Look, look at all the love I have, how I did not know for the longest time what to do with it. I have always been a constant. Yes, I think your daughter grew up to be a constant, a reliable beast, a steadfast gallop, a varmint so deliberate and self-assured she could never have known a forest, could never have set hoof in one, not in a million years, not even in a prayer. And then this next poem that I'm going to read is called Regaining My Voice. I was taught at a young age that my opinion would never be important so long as men occupied my space. I never had a say in my own household, testosterone a force I could never win against. My father more than once made me cry on the way to school with chastising remarks. My brother would sneak out at night to teepee houses and underage drink, yet I was the black sheep of the family, always met with disapproving eyes for being too weird, for being too loud, for being too me. So I learned to hold my breath, I discovered that I don't know and static silence would not condemn me. I choked down anger, threw away sadness, shook off irritability in the presence of others. And suddenly, everyone wanted a piece of me. People found me more interesting when my mouth stopped moving. I became pleasantry. Who doesn't like a nice, temperate, quiet thing? When I am asked where my voice has gone or why my birchwood tongue has forgotten gravity, please understand that I am trying to unlearn the only way I've ever known how to survive. It has been eons since my emotions last cracked the surface. Not the pretty ones, the guttural, the damned, the raw, the feelings I believe best left buried deep in my gut, in my throat. I will dig them out of my anatomy with trowel and scythe. I will cleave myself open until every emotion is on beautiful display. It may not look like I am trying most days, but believe me, I am cracking bones with every waking thought. Slowly, I will peel away the muscles and skin until I find enlightenment. I will unlearn the silence for myself and only myself. I just need time to remember how revolutionary sound can taste. This next poem is a short one, and it is called Can't Quit Girl. I wonder when I will stop calling myself girl. There are 6 months left of being a meager 20-something. Once I magic pumpkin myself into a 30-year-old, will I feel woman? Will I be everything adult I've always feared becoming? Or, when I am 80 with a crooked back and gummy smile, will I still go by girl like it is nothing, like kid is all I have? Will I forever whittle myself down to this? I'm going to read one more poem to wrap this up. All the poems I've been reading today are from my new book, Weirdo, which was published through Game Over Books. You can find it through Game Over Books site or from my personal website, juliagaskill.com. And this last poem that I'm gonna read today is called Horse Girls. Praise to the horse girls who clutch their hopes and wants like reins in their pinprick fists. Those who dream of nothing but open fields, cantering, a sugar cube taken from a trusted palm. Praise to those young ones who doodle stallions within the margins of their social studies homework, tape posters of Palominos and Frisians on their bedroom ceilings, devour any book with the word thoroughbred laced between the dialogue. Praise to the horse girls who long for a mare of their own, though their family resides in the city, the ones who have only ridden at their family friend's ranch, or the ones who have only ridden that one time at the coast, or even the ones who have never ridden, that will not stop their pining for the wind whipping through their hair, braid trailing close behind. Praise to those lonesome babes whose magnolia hearts yearn for a friend who will carry them to the ends of this sullen earth. How beautiful their smiles once they discover the perfect name for their someday steed. Praise to the horse girls who, without notice, stop their doodling, take down the posters, move on. And yet, there is still a wildness in them, even once they have grown. There is still a longing for that open field, that unbroken bond, that all things adventure. Praise. Praise how their hearts never forget the want of the wind.
Thanks, Julia. And let's go back in time just a little bit, a few decades, to Mary Baraka. This is YMCA number 35. We talked all the time. As spirits, we were allowed, and watched the different primates in their turns and elegant twists. We caught the rising virus like a style of neon murders, a calm blood washing upward. Between giggles and drunk laughter, wisdom hit the walls and ceiling, windows closed if open, opened if closed. It was never quite, no familiarities were permitted. The good guys sat and watched the door. The wizards crawled from 14th Street to the outer crust. Colors and rain, the well-dressed, well-spoken, the poverty-stricken, the bony, the important maniacs. They were singing through their noses and fingers. Everybody was a headline. A massacre that could not be a revelated guerrilla. These were rich people and heroes. The stink was not stink, and the garbage not really garbage. If you could bend concrete and hang like the high tent of drunken rapists, applause would rock and roll you in your dreams. Awards could be coughs, hands reaching, poetry of climaxes proposed. Crippled weasels I knew and sang a song for the airplane underground. Not to be subjective, a heart full of dashes, no opening through backs exploding in their dreams. It is not enough to witness. You are somewhere anyway, and you won't sweat. 2. Riding through the valley, Sunday's coldness, a hole in summer, a red dark ball pasted over with notes. But picture the temps, dew walking clean among black waves. Picture a blinding whiteness like Cap Calloway's shoes. The nigger computers bluely reporting ghosts ahead who are cannibals. We ponder for the bop trillionth time the madness of gods. And that's Amiri Baraka. And we'll slide effortlessly across time and space from Amiri Baraka to John Miller. John's poetry has featured at the Elizabeth Jones Art Center's Festival of Feelings and at the Connecticut Poetry Festival. His first collection, Olympic, was published by the Poetry Box last June. His poetry has also appeared in the West Trade Reviews, Tiny Sea Literary Journal, Wingless Dreamer, and Cathexis Northwest, among many others. John is a founder of Portland Ars Poetica, a literary poetry collective that does all kind of poetic things. And now, doing poetic things, here's John Miller.
Many thanks to Dan Raphael and KBOO for the opportunity. This first poem is called All Weaving. Begins with a knot. Inside a knot, each knot, a void so that the weave together could carry anything, in nothing carry something. I imagine each weave infinitesimally distinct, one unto the other, unlike and into the next, unknown. The knot as conception, the weave a birth of what's carried in the world. Here what we lead, head in, thereon lies the trail. The trail. Whose was it that began with one golden knot? One who dragged ideals, the grotesque champion into open Cretan air. All weaving begins as a labyrinth of air. One strand can wake you alive to the great dawn dream. Here your work begins. Zero sum. At the back of the yard, the dog investigates something dead. I spend the morning reading poems by a woman dying as she wrote them. I listen to a fly dying at a window that doesn't open. I make a meal of one dead animal. I will make of the next one another. I wonder if the president will die in office. Which scandal will be the death of the Catholic Church? What is any afternoon but each day maturing with the dead? One day my mother and father will die. I will. Every day I ask my joints if this pain is death, if that one. I tongue my teeth. So to the year, every year, everything I forget is dead. So to everything I pass by, if it's behind me, it's dead. I drive forward. Whatever it is, I've occasionally run it over. Would I return the same way? It will die again. This is how I think of ideas. The next one are three attempts at haiku from when I traveled in Kyoto. The first one was published as an American sentence. Takase River. Shallow water, stone straightened, you wear night jasmine scents, hills, history. Bete window, crow, crane, sparrow, each rests, glances my way, teach me how to treat her well. Hidden, I can never tell you my secrets, they are birds, hid, singing in the trees. This next one in the spirit of a sonnet called The Night. The night was a struggle, and I dreamt, then awoke as if I'd overcome, but what? In the dark, listen to hard rain itself sent to course over this house. The storm guttered and poured. I imagined my house a rock in a river, the river a forever surround where I'm unsteady in it. Get up. Check locks. Walk around under all the sound in the world and listen. Listen. My breath, heartbeat, the dark a window blank with tomorrow. No answers in the moment stark, reminder, the inestimable power of sorrow. Sick rush of what's forgotten, how none of it matters until it matters right now. The next three are explicitly about where and who I am. The passport. This is dedicated to the 14th Amendment. It takes a few minutes to read. The news should make you afraid. It would take only a few minutes, and your answer not good enough for them. Your halting English puts you in the van where they give you no hour. You're driven deeper and deeper into some directionless maw of the state. Hours into finding out, I don't know if I could stop shaking enough to find out if there's some way I can make this a quickly corrected mistake. But they would tell me it takes weeks, months, or that when I speak to you, it will be through brittle copper. You will be suddenly nowhere, all you ever had of this country revealed as nothing thinness, as paper. So, I will take a minute now and call you, tell you to carry your passport because they're picking people up who look like you, carry it a few weeks, as if all burdens of skin, language, or birth resolve with any status change, ceremony, or oath. Mama, it would take me saying it, take a minute, carry it, that blue and eagle proof. Even if it has words in it they say don't want you, take it everywhere you go, and you don't give it over, you don't let them take it, you don't let them say that. Not for a second, you turn away, you walk away, keep doors closed. Don't give them the first word, not at your house, not in your home, not to your... This next one is in the spirit of a Sestina, my mother. When she passes, all I hope for is a rock. Smooth, igneous ovoid from El Rio Cauca. River I've never seen, which my mother, as if with a camera, has made me picture. Its gorge course, the music to its water. With her father, rocky shore, play, dance that for hours on some days had nothing to do with money. Most other days, she had no money, which is why her sister smashed plantains with the river rock, played with my mother, a kitchen dance to distract from their mother, whose anger flowed in rivers out of their darkened bedroom. A migraine's cloudy music will always remind my mother of the only camera that once took a picture of her, a borrowed camera. My mother posed, dressed to play, no money for portraitist formal dress or leisure on a Sunday. Street music of a growing city, modernity stacked like the sharp Inca rock foundation of a cathedral, sacraments that once condemned a river of new Christians who lived enslaved to the pickaxe dance of Potosí. That silver, that gold paid for a crown's court dances. 500 years later, my father flourishes a camera the day she visits his family's house on the river. She's never felt manifested as land, real money, or felt such cruel, embarrassed urges as to hurl a rock at his family's parrot, whose playful hours-long music was song of calling her India Morena Mona. My father's musical tastes run to brass playing for the wedding, a towering cake, and dancing for 100 guests. But in the dark, she steals the mashing rock. 3 months later, they marry in New York City. An unknown camera that day at City Hall. Why run away? On long walks around Brooklyn, she asks the East River, what to make of the United States? It's always crossing a river, from a subway map that's all the trains seem to do. English is no music she sings day to day. She demands I pay with her money and let my English win them over. My father compels her to dance with him at parties thrown by cousins in New Jersey. A camera that day pictures her, beginning descent to her mother, the rock, a dark napping from creation itself, one from the great river. This rock I hold, the music I play with it, what I can picture not at all like a camera, nothing to do with money. It is heart and mind. It is stones dancing. This is My Name. I am almost out of stories about myself. Over the J, I kept telling the same ones over and over. That long beginning with naming. Each letter comes slowly, over time, like musical notes carrying over years. I may never get to the questions with only 4 letters taken, 2 decades to form. Where I am now, at closure of the O, to what I hope is a 20-year silence of H, over which I may head toward an answer. What it is to be lost in the middle, begun and uncertainly toward, trying to find one before that singing comes back like an opening to Mahler. I wrote this during a power outage. When the power goes out, this is the lesson. If it flickers, it's going to go. Or it will never only flicker. It'll go, first with a stutter, like a photographer's flash. Remember those? But slower, seeming to affect everything in the world, which is untrue but a selfish thought. Because when it goes, I grow afraid it takes too much of me, that it takes modernity and my usual betrayal of evening to leave me alone with the moonlight, with hours, with sleep. In that uncanny silence, did I dream? Does that matter more than waking? Until morning that comes here so late most of winter and with no flicker, just slower. The next 3 are, I guess, explicitly pandemic poems. 2 of them are published in my chapbook, Olympic, which was published in 2022 by the Poetry Box. The first is An Unexpected Negotiation, April 2020. I am here to speak on Demeter, on the creation of winter, which no longer has to do with the weather. Outside looks like the burgeoning of any spring, but I don't know if there was another abduction. We're here, and we're bargaining, and with so many already dead. Yes, they suffered, and they suffer as much as they matter, as much as your daughter. And so far, your lot has been indifferent, as our world filled with sirens and crying out, with a quiet resignation, with seething. It is all so deafening, all this time waiting for a wrong kind of change to be made right. Is it to you we ask? I am ready with fruit, with any red seed needed, if that's what's needed. But I need to know about your Olympian conferences, your decisions, our stories of you. Those would die too. And it's no threat. It's real. That's how much this time it's different. It's urgent. I'm pleading. Please. In my professional life, I work in the Lloyd Tower, so I before pandemic, had the Lloyd Center Mall through a skyway. So this is a walk around the Lloyd Center Mall, September 2020. What do I say to this place? A stranger to me now, and stranger from before I left it, as I return there today, for an hour, walk emptily around emptiness, huge and empty place. What is this looming? What is this hollowness? Asking where I am going within the circle of an empty space. Where is anyone 7 months from where history might name to remember with specific zeroing? Measuring everything before by the whole of the lack after. This strangeness to write now, to have everything with no one in it, no one coming, no one through glass doors opening to glimmer with the daylight, to have it so clean and quiet, orderly and trustworthy in the manner of preservation, missing only the public life, which makes a place a place. Instead, I am in some restless dream of observation that's getting worse for too many. This frustrating nowhere, the heart in its work of entering and exiting, keeps trying to place and failing. And this is Eris as a Limfall, spring 2021. There is one tree limb that hangs by a wire. Someone had U-bolt anchored it in the past, and at a distance it looks floating in space, taking languid turns in the early morning. Other fallen limbs crack sap scent into the air as they spill onto the neighbor's driveway, their lengths an amputated canopy rich with needles, needles ending in tiny flowers. Their weight and rush of falling what I slept through, as if a lightness, a secret. There was no sizzling, severed power line, no smashed visage hood of a car parked. The fall required no lights, no sirens, no startling awake to find disaster. Mislead me, Faith. Make me think I need to thank for the near miss of some huge thing. On my desk, a Lenten calendar journal, and I'll conclude with this. I have not opened it yet to its first blank lesson. I am wary of seeing the naked name of God again, capitalized expansively, then curt with the rest of itself and ending with the sound of a book fallen. Duh. So little in between except a portal. A clever trick of English. Where does the believer travel? What do they find there? I could take the path of 40 days. I read quickly and I could catch up. At 15, I admired the neat black suit, measured for you as novitiate, sartorial symbol, somber journey, deep as an 8 o'clock mass. Remember my concerns then? More to do with the city around me and a gap I perceived between myself and the future. Now, in a different city, I believe I know something about what to name and not name, about what will happen and what will likely not between now and then. I mean, I could ask again, or I can keep traveling, taking notes along the way.
And thank you, John. It looks like there's time to stick in another poem from Tongo Eyes and Martin's Blood on the Fog. Smooth. She pushes my soul back into my tear ducts, her classical bravery speaking on behalf of a playful love. Our house is ascending. I held you in every room and in every room right now, commenting on the sea line, putting boots to whirlwind. Every place she turned my life into decent artwork. Maybe my second life came too soon. Poet stops writing secretly, instantly of a new instrument of a new people, a slice of the universe enjoying its exhaustion. Poet offers help to everyone they see. Maybe my third life came too musically. She is loved back by her books. Did you come all the way back from the Harlem Renaissance just to have a word with me? I am for sure your poetry, too. Tom Gleis and Martin. I'm Dan Raphael. This is The Talking Earth, and this is our winter-spring pledge break. Again, I want to thank our poets tonight, our featured poets, Julia Gaskill, John Miller, and David Mehmet, all the way from La Grande. I want to thank KBOO, all its listeners. I want to especially thank those of you who are contributing here to KBOO. Well, I want to thank everyone who's listening. I want to thank all the poets scrunching around Portland, trying to find venues and trying to find audiences. You know, things go in so many cycles. There's so many poets around, so few places around. I probably say this every 2 months when I talk, but hey, one thing different about this show, well, two things different. Well, A, the featured poets are always different, always wonderful. That doesn't change. I'm always here, for better or for worse. One difference this time, other than it being pledge break, is that I didn't read any of my poems. Hey, that's a master of constraint. I think I forgot to mention my fine engineer, producer, guardian angel, Patrick Bocard, also the founders of Talking Earth, Walt Curtis and Barbara Morticella. Again, please, KBOOFM.com. Please give us some money. You can give a lump sum now. You might get a little t-shirt or something. You might get a book. You might just get the blessings of karma, which, hey, we can all use it as it's spring, and who knows what comes after this. Take care. Good night.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and